950 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. Across Texas, more than 170 people are still missing following the July 4th flash flooding. Among them, Robert Brake Jr.'s mother and father.
They got washed away in their cabin Friday morning. And we came down to help in the search efforts. Maybe not be able to find my parents under this tragedy, but maybe we can help somebody else find theirs and have some closure and peace.
More flooding overnight in Ruidoso, New Mexico as well. Three people were killed when a house was washed away. The mayor of Philadelphia says the city has reached a tentative agreement with 9,000 city workers who have been on strike since the beginning of the month. Russia firing a record 728 drones at Ukraine overnight, as well as 13 missiles. All that as the European Court of Human Rights delivers two rulings against Russia. One of them finding that Russia committed violations in invading Ukraine. Another that Russia was behind the downing of MH Flight 17 in 2014. This is ABC News.
As Wisconsin as a fish fry on a Friday night, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
For WRCE 107.7, I'm Joanne Krulatz. The Wisconsin Supreme Court has cleared the way for the state to institute a ban on conversion therapy. The court ruled that a Republican-controlled legislative committee's rejection of a state agency rule that would ban the practice of conversion therapy for LGBTQ+ people was unconstitutional. The 4-3 ruling from the court comes amid the national battle over LGBTQ+ rights. Governor Tony Evers issued nearly two dozen partial vetoes last week when he signed the state budget into law. Perhaps the most significant, according to the governor himself, was the removal of a 2029 deadline to close Green Bay Correctional Institution. Evers has proposed closing the 1898 prison as part of a broader overhaul of the state's correction system. He proposed that plan back in February and said it would cost $500 million. But last week, the governor said the legislature hadn't engaged with his plan or proposed their own, and he objected to settling a firm deadline without one in place. He removed the 2029 deadline to close Green Bay Correctional. Still, the budget keeps $15 million to begin planning for a prison realignment and potential closure of the prison. A proposed bill that aims to make it easier to access government records is currently awaiting action in the Wisconsin State Legislature. The legislation would make it easier for groups who pursue legal action over government records to win back legal fees for their expenses. It states that legal fees must be awarded to the requester of government records if a court determines that the filing of the lawsuit was a substantial factor in the decision to release those records. The bill was approved by the state Senate in May and advanced to a hearing in the state assembly in June. For WRCE News, I'm Joanne Krulatz.
The Brewers win the series. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Baseball, the Brewers beat the Dodgers 3-1 to take a 2-0 lead over L.A. in the 3-game series. They wrap it up this afternoon here at AmFam Field. Milwaukee rookie pitcher Jacob Mizorowski, with the start, gave up a home run to the Dodgers leadoff hitter Shohei Ohtani, Pat Murphy.
Giving up the leadoff home run, it's like getting knocked down in the first round. Here's one of the best hitters in the game, and he leaves a breaking ball up. He got back up, took a standing eight, and battled.
Mizorowski then settled in, not allowing another run throughout 6 innings, striking out 12 batters. Dodgers starter Clayton Kershaw said he didn't know much about the Miz before the game. How about now?
Yeah, I know him now, huh? I mean, that was super impressive. That was really special. I mean, everything, you know, obviously the velo, but I mean, he's got 4 pitches, commands the ball, and I mean, I don't know how you hit that, honestly. That's just really tough.
That's Dodgers pitcher Clayton Kershaw with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
As Wisconsin as a game of cribbage with good friends, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
It is going to be mostly sunny today. Our high right around 82 this afternoon. Tonight, nice and clear. We'll drop to 63 for a low. Tomorrow, more sunshine with a high of 84 with a chance of thunderstorms tomorrow night. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Outside now, it's 63.
Not completing high school is more of a social thing than it was an academic thing. Even though all these years have passed, I still had that longing to have my diploma.
At age 30, Carissa finished her high school diploma.
If you're even considering getting your high school diploma, you can do it.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Matt and Air on Air.
PJ Leash, the bug guy, he heads the entomology department at UW-Madison, and we are talking ticks.
When a deer tick transmits Lyme disease, it takes 36 hours, so about a day and a half. And that's why, in my mind, one of the single best things you can do as a precaution is to do regular tick checks. Because you've removed it, your risk goes down greatly to basically zilch.
Matt and Air on Air, weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Jane Mattenair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, women continue having problems accessing their health care. We're going to talk about that with Megan Kling. Join us.
Mattenair on Air, weekday mornings 9 to 11. News from the Center, WRCE.
Across Wisconsin on Civic Media, you're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. It is 6:06. It's a Wednesday morning, July 9th, 2025, and it is another beautiful morning to have you here up north, live from Lake Wissota. From wherever you're spending your mornings, listening across the Civic Media Radio Network, or listening on a podcast or watching us on social media, we thank you so much for getting your midweek started right here. I got a question for you. Do I sound a little different? Do I sound better rested? Do I sound like I'm going to get a big fat I told you so from Greg Bach when we talked to him on Friday? Because I did not know that this morning was going to go like this. I thought it was going to go completely the opposite as I finished my first night with a CPAP machine. Yes, you recall it well. There's Parker and all the kids in the peanut gallery, so happy. Like, is he going to be a little less grouchy today? Yes, perhaps so. Perhaps so. The brain fog of recent weeks has lifted, and I did not feel like I was being squeezed to death by a robot or anything like that. I really thought this could go sideways, that I'd be up all night, that I'd be struggling, claustrophobic, whatever the case may be. And instead, it went as well as could be expected. So, Tony, right away up on YouTube, it's night and day the difference. You clearly are very well rested. I feel very well rested. I feel great. Let's tell you what's coming up on the program today. And first off, you've got a former state legislator here who was reading through a state Supreme Court decision all about a particular legislative committee. So I have to give you the following warning. Get in, nerds.
Nerd alert!
We are taking a deep dive into how a bill becomes a law and how a law comes to life through rules. The rulemaking process is boring and routine, at least until Republicans in the legislature figured out a way to rig the process in a way that interferes with how the experts at state agencies make the law work for all of us. We will explain the legislature, the committee with the longest name, the Joint Committee for the Review of Administrative Rules, you know, JCRAR for short, and how the state Supreme Court yesterday called out GOP lawmakers for misusing it. And so between that and some other recent decisions, remember gerrymandered maps and the governor's partial veto powers, it appears the liberal justices now in charge of the court seem to be making it harder for politicians of all stripes to push the envelope on rules. And that is overall a good thing, even if you disagree with some of the decisions. And I do, but in terms of what it is they seem to be looking to accomplish, so far they're setting the tone. And we will talk to State Senator Kelda Royce in our 8 o'clock hour about that. In our 7 o'clock hour, there is no subtle way to put this. Some of Governor Tony Evers' biggest supporters are outraged. They are furious about how little was done in the new state budget for their high priority issues like child care and public education. Two of the biggest leaders in advocacy out there, Corrine Hendrickson for child care, Heather Dubois-Bordon for public education, believe that more could have and should have been done for a budget that would not have passed without help from Democratic legislators. So why wasn't there more in there for more Democrats to say yes to? We'll talk to Corrine and Heather about that. We'll have Climate Check with Melissa Baldoff, it being Wednesday and all. We'll check on Western Wisconsin news with James Kelly, as well as with Jimmy Cuscut. Earl Ingram is launching his Civic Media podcast, so we will talk to him as well. And Melissa Kay, hopefully with a pigeon on her shoulder. We'll see. And a reminder that tomorrow at 7:30, we'll talk to Congressman Mark Bocan. All right, along the way, of course, we'd love to have your texts and your comments. To do that, all you've got to do is head over to Facebook or YouTube and put some comments in the sections there, the Up North News or the Civic Media Facebook and YouTube pages. And you can also text us through the Civic Media app, and we may share those along the way as well. Well, we could, if I had it up on screen. Let me go get that right now, because who knows, somebody might have said something already. There you go. And, of course, that's also where we will see any voice notes that you send us through the Civic Media app as well. Tony tells us that if Paint Bucket isn't here today, I may lose it. Paint Bucket being the name of the rescue pigeon that Melissa Kay is hopefully got by now and is looking to probably give a new name. Parker Olson. No, Parker Olson's not the name. Parker Olson is standing by in Madison Studio A2. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm considering now, if we were to name the pigeon Parker Olson, could we just call it PJ? Parker Jr.?
Parker Jr.
Would that work?
I don't know. That makes you the pigeon daddy, and that's just biologically something I don't want to go there necessarily.
I guess that's a lot of responsibility I'm probably not ready for.
Yeah. It's probably better that way. Yeah. Did you catch any of the Brewers Dodgers last night?
Oh, I did. I did miss the top of the first inning. But
see, you can't join the game late. Shohei Ohtani is the leadoff hitter for the Dodgers, and you're thinking, Jacob Mazeroski, okay, this is going to be great. He gets strike one, he gets strike two. Here comes the 0-2 pitch from Mazeroski, and Shohei says, yeah, let me welcome you to the big leagues with this monster home run.
Yeah.
Dodgers go up 1-0, and then that was pretty much it.
That's all she wrote. Yeah.
Clayton Kershaw for the Dodgers, you know, he's not as young as he used to be. He's kind of on the mortal side. And
he was still very good.
I'm just saying he was not, you know, again, this is not 2018 Clayton Kershaw.
No, yes.
Is what I'm saying. So the Brewers beat the slumping Dodgers 3-1. The Dodgers have now lost 5 in a row. But that first home run by Ohtani, 431 feet over the center field wall. I'm just watching this thing going, yep, welcome to the bigs, Jacob. So that's all right. You know what he did after that, after the home run? He struck out the next 5 batters, yielding only 4 hits and 1 walk. And then, get this, after Mazeroski left the game, in comes Jared Koenig, and then Abner Uribe, and then Trevor Megill to close things out. None of them allowed a base runner over the last 3 innings. And this is, again, one of those weird baseball stats. You know, who tracks these things? Somebody's got to track them. But between those 4 Brewer pitchers, their average fastball was clocked at 99.3 miles an hour. That is the highest average fastball speed in any single game by the pitchers on a team since they started tracking pitch speed. Which I know hasn't been that long, but I also guarantee you Babe Ruth didn't throw it 100 miles an hour.
I think they track back to 2008, I think.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It is 100% the fastest game ever.
Without a doubt. And again, that is nothing against, you know, Sandy Koufax and all the others. It's just that they did not throw for velocity so consistently the way the pitchers do now. Now, of course, their arms fall off after about an hour and a half of a career. But now they rebuild them, you know, like Steve Austin. It's like the bionic pitcher. So Brewers were winners and looking good. And now you get a chance to do it again because they wrap up the series this afternoon. that Brewers put up left-hander Jose Quintana for an afternoon game with the pregame that starts at 12:35 on stations across the Civic Media Radio Network. Will you be at that one, too? I know you're at the last Wednesday afternoon game, so...
I will not. I would. Okay. I would love to, Pat.
But yes, I'm not in any way saying why wouldn't you go, but that is usually when we have our weekly, you know, show meetings. So you got to miss the last one.
And last week went fine.
You know what it did? Why don't you go to the ball game this afternoon? Yes.
Right.
Why don't you?
I'm out of here. I'll see you later, Pat.
I mean, look, bye-bye. Baseball's all about superstition. If it works, it works. You know, so.
Yeah.
All right, let's look at Brittany Merlot's forecast for the state today. She notes that the cold front that sparked up some showers and storms has moved on, and high pressure is building in for a couple of days. And that could then be followed by some heavy rain potential for Friday for some spots. But for today, partly sunny, less humid. Seriously, less humid. I opened up every window in the house this morning, and it is glorious in here. Highs today in the upper 70s up north, low 80s south, with a light north wind at 5 to 10 miles an hour. For tonight, mostly clear and comfortably cool. Areas of fog are possible. 50s for most across the state, near 60, down close to the Illinois border with calm winds, and Brittany will be here with all the forecast details coming up in just under an hour. But it was one of those days where it is by and large beautiful, but there are those puffy clouds. And if you ever look at like a radar, you don't see like the line of rain. You see like little dots here and there. Here's a little, you know, just a little pop-up rain.
Is that what they call scattered?
Scattered. That would be scattered. There's scattered clouds. And every so often you'd look at a cloud and go, well, that one looks like it's swelling up like, you know, a zit you're about to pop and it's going to rain on you. Sorry about the analogy there. That's a visual. But I say that as somebody who was noticing those clouds while driving in my Jeep running errands down to Eau Claire.
Top down.
And I'd just be looking at individual clouds that I was about to go under going, is this the one that's going to open up and rain on my open Jeep? It was nerve-wracking. At the same time, it was beautiful. But again, I'm one of those people who, one of those, again, when you see a thunderstorm just pop up on the radar,
yeah,
that actually happened to me once, and I ended up with 2-3 inches of water in the Jeep. So I am, you know, which cleans up fine. It's a Jeep.
It's a Jeep,
you know,
yeah.
But still, it's a little extra work, and it's a little embarrassing.
I get you. Yeah, getting caught in the rain isn't the greatest thing in the world.
So, no, I was a little nervous about it, but it was just a lovely day, and I love that it is, you know, less humid. That's the nice part. From the text line, Jim in Brookfield, good morning, Pat. You look and sound well-rested. My wife has been using CPAP for a few months now, and all has gone well. I'm surprised how quiet it is. That is exactly what Sherry said when we woke up. She's like, I couldn't believe how quiet it was. And of course, she meant my snoring, but which was non-existent. But also the, hey, he's not breathing, which was also not an issue. Your good night's sleep, Pat, is just in time to appreciate the fact that the subcommittee joker has now been reined in and the actions of a few will no longer be able to block laws for the common good. Yes, joker is an acronym for another one of those weird little legislative committees. And so we're going to talk more about that at 6:30. So look for that. But thank you, Jim. And yes, it was extremely quiet. It was a little fidgety. But, you know, we still managed to, you know, get a good night's sleep in.
Describe this apparatus for me. Is it literally just like a little mask over your nose and mouth?
Stay here. I'll be right back.
Oh boy. Pat's going on an adventure. No, well, okay, not that much of an adventure. That's like within arm's length.
I don't have the whole thing. It's like a headgear.
Okay.
And then it's almost not quite a scuba mask, but I brought the little piece that goes on the front here. So, you know, it's not a pig snout.
It's like an oxygen mask that you see on like the sideline of a football game.
Yeah. It's not the biggest one that you could get. And then on the very front is where you would attach, you know, a little hose to the machine. And the machine is just crazy quiet, you know.
Nice.
And it's a difference maker, you know?
It's a whole new ball game.
It's a whole new world. It really is. So it's, yeah, you're going to have to get used to Pat with a little more pep here.
Ooh, peppy Pat. Here we go.
Peppy Pat. It could be a good thing for everybody, right? We can't have curmudgeonly Pat all the time. Hey, from the heart of America's up north, live from Lake Wissota, thank you for putting up with all this and making this the place to spend part of your mornings. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is News from the Center, WRCE.
My perfect day has sand, salt, water, and friends. But my moderate to severe plaque psoriasis can take me out of the moment. Now I'm all in with clearer skin thanks to Skyrizi. Risankizumab Riza, a prescription-only 150-milligram injection for adults who are candidates for systemic or phototherapy. With Skyrizi, most people saw 90% clearer skin, and many were even 100% plaque-free at 4 months. Skyrizi is just 4 doses a year after 2 starter doses.
Don't use if allergic to Skyrizi. Serious allergic reactions, increased infections, or lower ability to fight them may occur. Before treatment, get checked for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor about any flu-like symptoms or vaccines.
Thanks to Skyrizi, there's nothing on my skin. And that means everything. Ask your doctor about Skyrizi, the number one dermatologist-prescribed biologic in psoriasis. Visit Skyrizi.com or call 1-866-SKYRIZI to learn more.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. Ever since I started the recombobulation area, I've written an in-depth breakdown of every new edition of the Marquette University Law School poll. The newest poll asks about a range of topics, whether Tony Evers should run for a third term, where people stand on Donald Trump's economic policies, and a host of issues relating to the state budget. The poll paints a picture of a polarized Wisconsin. Many people are very dug into their partisan camps, which is perhaps to be expected in the most evenly divided state in the nation. But there are a number of issues polled that do have the support of more than two-thirds of Wisconsin voters. Those include extending Medicaid coverage for new moms, legalizing marijuana, making major increases in state aid for special education, providing mental health services in schools, allowing citizen-led ballot initiatives, and banning cell phones in schools. What do most of these issues have in common? They are policies being advanced by Democrats in Wisconsin.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area.
You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
As Wisconsin is dropping a line in your favorite fishing spot, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Hey, don't you forget that at Up North News, we have a daily newsletter. Sign up for it at upnorthnewswi.com. There's also a Sunday morning politics newsletter that we'd love to have you on board with. In this week's issue, back on this past Sunday, I talked about the state budget and the federal budget plan being passed, being rushed through, about Congressman Derek Van Orden trying to have it both ways on liking the bill and yet warning Governor Evers about something terrible that was in the bill. And we also had a question of the week and wanting to know, will this be a typical midterm cycle in 2026 where the party in power of the White House, Republicans in this case, will have a setback? Or will they actually build on their majorities for whatever reason? Either people like their ideas or they run, you know, the most fear-mongering ads, whatever gets the job done for them. What will 2026 be like? Now, keep in mind that we don't know a few things about 2026 yet, like, you know, will Governor Tony Evers announce that he's running for a third term? We do know, thanks to Molly Beck at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, that there is now officially a second candidate, Republican candidate, in the race for governor for next year. So, stating the obvious, the Republicans were never going to anoint one candidate and avoid a primary. There was always going to be a primary, which will be in August of next year. And we know that Josh Shulman, the Washington County executive, was the first Republican to officially declare. And now Bill Berrien, a businessman, a retired Navy SEAL, has officially entered the primary as well. Earlier, he had announced he was forming an exploratory committee. But now he, according to Molly Beck's story, has launched the campaign. It says here, comparing himself to President Donald Trump as a political outsider. Yeah, Donald Trump is an outsider. Berrien is the CEO of Pindle Global Precision and Liberty Precision in New Berlin. And let's see, in a statement to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, Berrien said, bureaucrats and politicians like Tony Evers have failed Wisconsin. They sold our land to China, encouraged illegal immigration in our communities, welcome boys into our daughters' sports and locker rooms. The time for change is now. A Navy SEAL is never out of the fight. We've seen that fighting spirit from President Trump. Notice he's not visiting, mentioning Derek Van Orden. It takes the same fight to run a Wisconsin manufacturing business, Berrien says in the new ad. In the 2024 race for president, Berrien spent more than $30,000 to support UN Ambassador Nikki Haley against Donald Trump. But of course, like every other Republican politician, they fold and take a knee and bow down to Donald Trump. And I mean, look, you're going to say Tony Evers has failed Wisconsin when Wisconsin had one of the best state recoveries of the 50 states post-pandemic because of his stewardship of what he did with federal pandemic relief. Congress went home, or not Congress, the legislature went home for 9 months at a time with a paid vacation, sold our land to China. Hardly a top issue here in Wisconsin. Encouraged illegal immigration. No, we've encouraged immigration reform. But don't hear you talking about that. And then if you're jumping right into, you know, welcoming boys into our daughters' locker rooms, I mean, honestly, that says it all. Maybe you'll be campaigning next with Jimmy Swaggart. Oh, wait, he died last week, you know. But I'm sure you'll find some other way to make this all about social issues when the people in Wisconsin want you to fight for them. Okay? They want you focused on creating jobs. They don't want you chasing jobs away because you don't like brown people, Donald Trump, so you got to round them all up. And Bill Berrien's over here saying, yep, I'm with this guy all the way. If you want to be somebody that serves Wisconsin as a Republican in this day and age, take some free advice. Yes, from a former Democratic legislator. But how about you finally stand on the side of the people, of all the people, and the things that they want, instead of just fear-mongering about the trans community or about Hispanics or about people on Medicaid being lazy, which takes me to the next topic, because we'll quickly move on from Bill Berrien. And that is the Agriculture Secretary for the United States, Brooke Rollins, somebody with little to no agricultural policy experience before Trump plucked her into the job. And she indicated yesterday that she is all good with the ongoing mass deportations of migrant farm workers, knowing full well that President Trump has been trying to have it both ways on there. But Secretary Rollins said she's not worried that the mass deportation of migrant farm workers will disrupt the U.S. food supply. She said there will be no amnesty for agricultural workers. She said we're gonna instead use automation and 100% American participation, which she said could be provided by what she called the 34 million people, able-bodied adults, on Medicaid. Good. I'm glad you went there, Secretary Rollins. I'm glad you went there. You want to make it your policy as Trump's agriculture secretary to say, I'm going to replace these people who actually want to work, who want to live in America, who want to earn a paycheck. And I'm going to replace them with Lloyd and with Esther. Because, you know, Lloyd's getting his Medicaid, but he's not completely disabled. So, yeah, he should be out there in the fields. And Esther, she's watching her adult children's kids, her grandkids, so that her kid and her husband can stay in the labor force. Because you haven't done enough about childcare expenses. But now you want Esther to jump out there and start milking the cows. And I know you think that what you're actually going after is Yolanda and Dude Gamer 69, who's on his couch, you know, surfing the internet and playing video games all day. Here's the thing, Secretary Rollins and Derek Van Orden. If those people are out there, it's time for you to name and shame And I don't mean one or two folks. I mean, you better name and shame the 34 million bums that you say are out there. Or otherwise, as usual, you're just making stuff up to forward a policy that is going to crash the American economy. More after the Midwest Farm Report. You're up north.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE. As Wisconsin is dropping a line in your favorite fishing spot, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Yesterday, U.S. Ag Secretary Brooke Rollins rolled out a brand new initiative involving agriculture as a key component to protecting national security. I'm Pam Yonke, starting you off before the opening bell on a Wednesday morning. Quick look at what's happening in agribusiness news. This is something that all of agriculture is paying attention to. Sam Kiefer is the Vice President of Public Policy at the American Farm Bureau Federation. He explains the plan and what it covers as he knows it right now.
Well, it's a 7-part plan for addressing agriculture security, and it includes limiting ownership of American farmland by adversaries of the United States. Also involves enhancing supply chain resilience and safeguarding both plant and animal health. Perhaps most importantly, the agriculture secretary has been added to the Committee on Foreign Investment in the United States.
Sam Kiefer with the American Farm Bureau Federation, he says another element is that Brooke Rollins has now been added to the Committee on Foreign Investment in the United States. They investigate and consider, approve, or disapprove any business in the U.S. that's merging with or being acquired by foreign investors. So definitely powerful when it comes to the food supply chain. Kiefer says we also need to keep things in perspective on this land ownership issue. He said right now only about 3% of all privately held U.S. agricultural land is foreign owned. Markets are next.
In my County Farm Bureau, I'm more than a member. I'm an advocate for local farms and families. Serving on the board has given me a chance to create real change in our community. From organizing volunteer opportunities to promoting agriculture at local events, we connect our neighbors to the farms that feed them. Together, we're building a stronger and well-informed community. Join us and make a difference today.
A voice for farmers, a vision for agriculture, Wisconsin Farm Bureau.
Rural Mutual Insurance, keeping Wisconsin strong.
All business owners want the same thing, to make their business succeed. At Rural Mutual, they help that happen. As the third largest writer of commercial business in Wisconsin, they take the time to learn your business so they can properly protect you. Call your local agent today or visit ruralmutual.com.
Rural Mutual Insurance, keeping Wisconsin strong.
On the barrel cheese yesterday, we gained a penny and three quarters to 172¾. 40-pound block cheese up 0.75 cents. 169¼, while AA butter dropped 0.25 cents to 261¾ per pound. This morning, the August Class 3 milk that goes into cheese is up a nickel, 17.96. Right now, the corn market is quiet, soybean market quiet, and the wheat market quiet, starting on a Wednesday. Just a quick market snapshot. I'm Farm Director Pam Yonke.
As Wisconsin is brats on the grill for a tailgate, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
It is going to be mostly sunny today, our high right around 82 this afternoon. Tonight, nice and clear, we'll drop to 63 for a low. Tomorrow, more sunshine with a high of 84 with a chance of thunderstorms tomorrow night. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Outside now, it's 63.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Years ago, I had some, I had a rainbow. No, it was a shirt. It was given to me, and I wore it because I support all people. And a friend of mine, like, you sure you want to walk around in that? You know, a t-shirt, people might think. I'm like, people might think I'm a human being that supports other human beings. I wore sports jerseys sometimes. No one ever says, are you worried people are going to think you're on the Cubs?
I don't think anyone would think that, though.
Oh, you haven't seen the curveball.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. The Maggie Dawn Show.
Madam Mayor, Satya Rhodes Conway from the fabulous city of Madison.
A lot of people say, I don't like politics. It's all dirty and angry and blah, blah, blah. It's really about caring about your community, finding a way to like bring it back to people talking to each other about what is important in our place and how do we take care of each other and use the levers of government to do that. That's really what it's about.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show at its new time, weekdays 4 till 6 p.m. Todd Alba.
Hey, everybody. Join us next time as Pat Kreitlow of Mornings with PK and Trigvi Olsen, senior advisor at LP, joins us to discuss national and state issues and a what's worse on pizza.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays 2 to 4.
There is a lot still ahead on this morning's program. State Senator Kelda Royce will be along. Melissa Baldoff with Climate Check. Melissa Kay with Pigeon Quest. Jimmy Cuska and James Kelly with Western Wisconsin News Updates. Earl Ingram talks about his new podcast. And 1 hour from now, we'll talk to Heather Dubois-Bornon from the Wisconsin Public Education Network and Corrine Hendrickson from WECAN, one of the child care provider groups, about their unhappiness with what is in the new state budget agreement. They believe much more could have been done. All right, there is the new edition of the Up North News Daily newsletter. It includes an article about brats and what it is about Wisconsin that makes them so unique to brat. Why do you find them here more than any place else? And also Selena Heller's story about the state Supreme Court ruling that upholds abortion care access in Wisconsin. So all of that in the newsletter. Let's make sure that you get signed up for that over at upnorthnewswi.com. All right, here comes that nerd alert again. I warned you, it's coming. It's time. Yep, there it is.
Nerd alert.
We need to explain some stuff from a state Supreme Court decision yesterday. But most of the news reports will tell you that the story was about so-called conversion therapy, which is, you know, quackery disguised as torture for mostly young people who are having questions about their sexual identity and trying to, you know, essentially convince them that, you know, they are straight. Sure. So you may have heard the news story that the state Supreme Court made a ruling yesterday that said the Evers administration can go ahead with a ban on so-called conversion therapy. Let me tell you the politics behind this case as a former member of the legislative committee that was involved. It's got a long name. It's called the Joint Committee for the Review of Administrative Rules, or JCRAR. That's fine. So JCRAR, all about administrative rules. So what are these rules? Well, here's the thing. When legislators or members of Congress, but we'll stick with legislators, when you write a bill and that bill is going to become law, you can't possibly include in the bill everything that could come up when the new law is being implemented and put into effect. There could be things like workplace safety rules, professional licensing in a way that doesn't get outdated, rules on how to register to vote, how to determine who will get these grants for new tourism centers, on and on and on and on. So that's what executive branch agencies do. So let me back up a bit. The legislative branch passes a bill. The governor over in the executive branch signs it into law, and the executive branch agencies, the Department of Natural Resources, the State Elections Commission, whatever, they write rules that help put that law into force and have it take effect. So you may ask, okay, once the legislature sends a bill to the governor and he or she signs it into law, does the legislature have no more say into how it's interpreted through the rules process? I mean, what if a legislator said, wait, that is not what I meant for that law to do? Well, legislators have a process, and it's that committee called JCRAR to review these administrative rules that are written by these agencies. Now, this has been around for a while, so what's different? Why did the state Supreme Court feel the need to weigh in on this? Well, to bring it back to, you know, Grandpa telling stories here, when I was in the legislature 15 years ago, and served on JCRAR, that committee was a backstop, part of a system of checks and balances, so that if, say, the DNR wrote up a rule that sounded way out of line with the law that we'd passed, we could use JCRAR to temporarily, important word here, hold up the rule and maybe even ask the full legislature to weigh in on whether this rule is right or not. But to do all that between the executive branch and the legislative branch and this rules committee, you had to have one thing. You had to have trust. This is a collaborative process, writing these rules. It has to be built on trust. And sadly, that is not the era that we live in now. In the 14 years that Republicans have controlled the Wisconsin legislature, a lot of things built on trust have been abused. Exhibit A, gerrymandered maps. Yes, I know Democrats in other states have committed gerrymandering as well. Doesn't make it right. Here in Wisconsin, it was Republicans who did it in such a diabolical fashion in 2011 that it destroyed trust between the parties for a generation. But there's also, beyond the maps, there's the confirmation process that has been misused and has led to a lack of trust. I mean, are you aware the state Senate is still sitting on well over 100 nominations from Governor Tony Evers for various agencies, boards, and departments? Those are supposed to be done right away. But of course, there's no rule that says it has to be done right away. So that process is being abused. What Republican legislators are doing is, instead of confirming these nominees, they say, well, you go ahead and start your work. And if we don't like the work you're doing, then we will schedule a vote on whether to confirm you. And if we reject your confirmation, you're essentially fired. That is not how the process is supposed to work. But Republicans found a way to abuse it, to use a loophole, however you want to put it. And that needs to be fixed. Then there's the budget. We talked about this one recently. The legislature approves the funding. The governor signs the bill. And yet the GOP sometimes uses the JFC, the Joint Finance Committee, to put a hold on funding some things that they don't like, even though the full legislature already approved it. It's a weird form of double dipping. And the state Supreme Court, a little over a week ago, said, no, that process is being abused. You can't do it that way. And now yesterday, they said the same thing about the rulemaking process. Because it's one thing to put a hold on a rule in order to review it. It's another thing to claim that this committee can sit on the rule indefinitely, essentially blocking its implementation. That's a legislative veto that the Wisconsin Constitution does not allow. So look, if legislators want conversion therapy to continue torturing our young people, don't hide behind this obscure but powerful rulemaking committee. Just come out and say it. Say where you really stand, but don't abuse the separation of powers. The people of Wisconsin elected a governor statewide, and there are things a governor and the executive branch get to do on their own. There are other things where it needs the legislative branch in order to pass laws or review rules, but don't misuse the process and blow up trust in the process. And that, I believe, takes us back to this new liberal majority on the Wisconsin Supreme Court. What I see them doing. Here's the big picture. They are slowly modernizing the rules of state government that reflect the times, including the way Republicans have been abusing this process. But the thing is, again, they're being reform-minded, and that means they're making some decisions that the governor doesn't like either, and that I didn't like. Take you back to last week. I did not like that state Supreme Court decision that limited one particular way that Governor Evers was using his partial veto. But if I'm going to give the liberal justices credit, it's that they are looking past one episode and they're looking at the partial veto overall. What they're doing is, again, modernizing rules that reflect the times, that make it tougher for a politician of any political stripe to push the envelope on what you can do with a partial veto, what you can do with budget numbers and joint finance, what you can do with rules in JCRAR. slowly but surely, we have reformists in Madison, finally. And they're on the Wisconsin Supreme Court. And even though, like I said, I don't necessarily agree with a particular decision, when you look at the long-range impact, and they seem to be, this appears to be the reform that we're looking for and a majority that ought to be protected. So the result of all this is going to be less political mischief, and that's great. But I would also let folks know there is a faster way to get the job done on reform, faster than waiting for cases to come up before the state Supreme Court. And that is to take a good look at your own state senator or state assembly rep and see if maybe they're part of the problem when it comes to abusing things like map drawing and budgeting and rulemaking. And that maybe it's finally time to have a legislature that is more focused on service than on power trips. And that's something that has to be decided every other November in our voting booths. I mentioned earlier that there is a new entry into the governor's race, and that would be Bill Berrien. A story was in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel this morning. Berrien is 56 years old and does not, again, know if Evers will be running or not, but Berrien already has an ad out and targets Governor Tony Evers in it. Berrien joins the race after having raised $1.2 million since April through a PAC that he launched earlier this year, a political action committee that he says is aimed at boosting Republican candidates in tough election cycles. Now, Berrien will not be the last Republican to get involved here. It will not just be Josh Shulman versus Bill Berrien. There is the potential that you will have heard of neither one of them by the time August of next year rolls around, because there are also other folks who are considering bids. There's Congressman Tom Tiffany. There's Tim Michaels. There's Eric Hovde. The state Senate president, Mary Felskowski from the Tomahawk area, she is certainly sounding like somebody who wants to run for governor. I saw another press release from state Senator Eric Wimberger in the Green Bay area, and maybe I'm just being too complimentary to him and his press team, but those press releases always look like somebody who's about to announce a run for governor. He certainly put out one ripping into the University of Wisconsin system again yesterday. That makes it sound like he could be positioning for a run. And so Republicans are going to face a primary for sure. And Democrats might, if Governor Evers decides not to run for a third term, the field is going to get real crowded real quick. And in all cases, I guess to Republicans right now and to Democrats later, if Governor Evers chooses not to run, I will give the same sage advice that I gave even when my hair wasn't getting this gray. And that's to keep your powder dry unless you are absolutely certain this is your ride or die. This is the candidate that you want. And sometimes you want that in a race. How do I know that? Because in the state Supreme Court race for next year, appeals court judge Chris Taylor, likely taking on incumbent conservative Justice Rebecca Bradley, has just picked up a key endorsement, Senator Tammy Baldwin. Now, Senator Baldwin is not the first high-profile endorsement for Judge Chris Taylor. She has four other key endorsements. The four justices, well, the three justices and one justice-elect, because Susan Crawford will take the position in a couple of weeks here. But she's already got some pretty high-profile endorsements. It's not the same as a gubernatorial primary, and Chris Taylor appears to be the person that progressives are putting their hopes in for a state Supreme Court that continues to be as reform-minded as the current court is making itself out to be. Today's history lesson is coming up next as we do mornings here, powered by Up North News on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Download the Civic Media app in the Google Play or Apple App Store and take us everywhere. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government buy-in for the people. New Mexico rolled out its automatic voter registration system July 1st, allowing citizens to conveniently register to vote or change residency information while at the DMV. Across the country, New Hampshire's legislature may burden its elderly and disabled absentee voters by requiring copies of ID when voting by mail and citizenship papers when registering by mail. New Mexico passed a sweeping voting rights bill, HB 4, in 2023. Among its provisions was automatically registering citizens to vote at the motor vehicle division, previously only an option. AVR has been successful in other states in registering younger voters and may expand registrations of the state's native voters as well. Local election officials will send newly registered voters their voting districts and precincts and how to opt out if they choose. New Hampshire, despite having next to no fraud, abuse, or non-citizen voting, has gone the other direction. Legislators sent bills to Governor Kelly Ayotte mandating proof of citizenship be sent with absentee registrations and that absentee voters must include copies of an approved ID or have their signature notarized. Such onerous rules adversely affect seniors and disabled voters who may not be able to make copies, and younger voters and college students who may not have ready access to those documents. Voter fraud and non-citizen voting are extremely rare, and such rules serve to keep more eligible voters from voting than ineligible ones. I'm Brian Beal.
Doctors Without Borders is delivering life-saving medical care where it's needed most in communities around the world. From bandaging war-wounded patients in Sudan to providing clean drinking water in Haiti, we're in more than 70 countries worldwide, bringing patients from sick to recovering, from emergency to aid, from crisis to care. This life-saving care is made possible by a global movement of supporters like you. Thank you.
The Todd Albaugh Show.
Why do we want to be proud to be an American? Why are we celebrating the United States?
That's say that you're going to define America in political terms. I define it in terms of what the Founding Fathers did in 1776. An ideal that we are still trying to fully live up to. That all men, all people, I would say, are created equal. All Americans are represented by the stars and stripes. I love the 4th of July.
The Todd Albaugh Show. Weekdays 2 to 4 on your local civic media radio station. And on the app, Matt and Air on Air.
PJ Leash, the bug guy, he heads the entomology department at UW-Madison, and we are talking ticks.
When a deer tick transmits Lyme disease, it takes 36 hours, so about a day and a half. And that's why, in my mind, one of the single best things you can do as a precaution is to do regular tick checks. Because you've removed it, your risk goes down greatly to basically zilch.
Matt and Air on Air, weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local civic... As Wisconsin has summer weekends being spent on the lake, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
1, 2, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, rock. 5, 6, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, rock. 9, 10, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, rock. We're going to rock around the clock tonight. Put your glad rags on.
Welcome to today's history lesson. Bill Haley and his Comets with Rock Around the Clock became, on this day in 1955, 70 years ago today, the first rock song to hit number one on the Billboard pop chart, where it would stay for 8 weeks. So you could very well make the case that today is the 70th birthday of rock and roll, thanks to Bill Haley. That was 1955. The next day, 1956, the kids were really listening to their rock and roll, and that included a little show in Philadelphia called Bandstand, which was hosted by Bob Horn. Yeah, Bob Horn. But on this day in 1956, he was replaced by a guy named Dick Clark. This was this day in 1956. The show went national, and Dick Clark hosted it until 1989. All happened, again, 59 years ago today. Or I'm sorry, 69 years ago today. Lots of happy birthdays today. Jack White from the White Stripes is 50 years old today. Mark Allman, lead vocalist for Soft Cell, is 68 today. Sometimes I feel very 80s right now. So 80s that I've got to bring in one of my favorite people to talk 80s music with. Melissa Kay joins us as well from WFHR in Wisconsin Rapids. How are you?
Good morning. I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. And you can tell the listeners out there, just like, what are you doing? Get to the point. Why? You know why Melissa's here. You know what? Well, but I want to give enough time for that. So we're actually kind of racing through today's history lesson here, like, if you don't mind.
Like it. Let's fly. But
no,
it's like the big reveal is coming. So happy birthday to Jim Kerr. He is 65 years old, or 66 years old today. He is the lead singer of Simple Minds. I feel like we're going with all 80s here. Simple Minds, big hit, of course, from The Breakfast Club. Don't you forget about me. The late O.J. Simpson, born this day in 1947. South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham is 70 today. Tom Hanks is 69. This one's going to make you feel old. Fred Savage from The Wonder Years. That cute little kid, he's 49 years old today. And let's give you one more. Two things that happened this day in 1977. First, here's Alan O'Day, who hit number one in 1977. Undercover Angel, Midnight Fantasy. I've never had a dream that makes me love. And maybe it was because this song was on the radio, but on the same day in 1977, Elvis Costello quit his job at a cosmetics factory to pursue a music career. I'd like to think he heard this song and said, I can do this. And
I'd never heard his last name.
Huh. The Alan O'Day or Elvis Costello?
Elvis.
No, not Elvis Presley. Jeez. The 14th Amendment guaranteeing due process. Hey, remember that thing? Was ratified this day in 1868. And let's see. It's National Don't Put All Your Eggs in One Omelet Day and National Sugar Cookie Day. But none of that matters because for these next 4 minutes.
Oh, we're just skipping the last two?
Oh, absolutely. We're jumping right into... Here's Melissa Kay and...
Pigeon Quest!
I mean, we put so much into that jingle, I had to use it one more time. When last we left Melissa Kay 2 weeks ago, she was on the verge of... collecting a rescue pigeon by the name of Paint Bucket. Yes. It is time to turn to Melissa now, who on her camera looks to be in a different room in her house.
I am.
This, I guess what HGTV calls the big reveal. Melissa, what do you got in the house over there?
Well, if you'll follow me as I turn my
camera
here.
Over.
Pan over.
Look at that.
That's a pigeon.
Is that a kennel?
It's a dog kennel, yep.
It's a dog kennel that's been converted into a home for a pigeon.
It's a pigeon palace.
And who is in the pigeon palace?
Well, I did bring home Paint Bucket, but now they have a longer name.
Ah.
It is Leonardo Luis in honor of some famous artists. And so Lilu for short.
Lilu.
Lilu, yep.
How do you spell that?
L-E capital L-O-U.
L-E capital L-O-U. Okay,
yeah.
Got it. Just wanted to make sure I got the banner up on the screen just right there. So, all right, there we go.
Yes, Lilu's hiding right now because they're very shy and they're still getting used to their surroundings and their space. And
oh, yeah, suddenly got to get used to all this, you know, banter that's going on here on Wednesday mornings going, what the heck is this?
And the noises are different and the space is different.
So how was the pickup? How was the journey?
It was very smooth. I mean, aside of like really weird rain that I had to drive through all the way down and back, but they were quiet. They had like an open-sided carrier. I met a volunteer in Janesville and just gave me the carrier and I drove back.
And then came the handoff. And when you, by the way, when you hear her say they, it's because we haven't really, unlike, you know, the Republican obsession with locker rooms, we don't really know Lilu's gender yet.
Nope. Because you can't tell unless they lay an egg.
That's
That's a punchline I can use in other ways down the road. I'm just going to keep that one in mind. So have you been happy so far since Lilu came home?
Yes. Right. So they suggested I put a yoga mat in the bottom. It's very easy to clean. And it gives them traction because they're a little wobbly on their feet.
A yoga mat.
Yes.
I like it.
Yep.
Something that you can hose it down and they can get traction. I feel like this really would have come in handy for a relative of mine back in the day who drank a lot. But it's just, I digress.
So, I don't know if you can tell there right now. I've got a little low dip in there. It's bath time. So if they want to come out and bathe, they can. But then, yeah, they are shy.
Okay.
And the most I've heard them coo a couple times twice. They usually do it in the early, like late afternoon. But then if I get too close, they grunt at me.
Oh, there's the pigeons grunt?
Yes.
See, look at the stuff we're learning here. We are going to learn so much every Wednesday. By next Wednesday, Lilu's going to be doing tricks. It's going to be great. You know, going to have like a little tiny hula hoop going around those pigeon pants. For more, catch Melissa Kay at 97.5 WFHR, 105.5 WIRI. Melissa, thank you. You're the best.
Always good to see you.
Talk to you later. Have much more coming up after the 7 o'clock news here on this Wednesday morning, powered by Up North News, live on the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center, and always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. The death toll in Central Texas has now reached 110 people, but the more staggering number is 170 still missing after the July 4th flash flooding. Eloise Jones was one of the girls from Camp Mystic who survived and says she was shocked by what she saw the night the water began rising.
From our cabins, we could see the highway, and you usually can't see that, so we could see all the way past all the trees that used to be there, and then we realized, like, we can't stay here.
Camp Mystic lost 27 campers and counselors and is still missing 5 campers and 1 counselor. 3 people were killed overnight in Ruidoso, New Mexico, where recent wildfires have made the area more prone to flash flooding. City of Philadelphia has reached a tentative agreement with 9,000 city workers who have been on strike since the beginning of the month. The rank and file still need to vote on it. Ukraine's Air Force says Russia sent a record 728 drones into Ukraine.